The Tom Woods Show, episode 588.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
If you're a homeschooling parent, you're probably working too hard. You're racing around to maintain a household and keep the younger kids entertained and keep an eye on what the older kids are doing. You're doing lesson plans and you're wearing too many hats and you're suffering emotional burnout. Well, thanks to the Ron Paul curriculum, you don't have to do that anymore. Get your life back with our self-taught curriculum. I teach courses for the curriculum, and it's a top-notch education. Plus, at my link only, get $140 in free bonuses. Check out that link at ronpaulhomeschool.com. Welcome to another post-debate commentary episode. This is, of course, a day late because I don't do an episode on Sunday, but no doubt it's going to be worth the wait. And I know some of you aren't watching the debates or aren't watching them any longer, but some of you may have heard about the crash and burn performance of Marco Rubio. We're going to have a lot of fun talking about that because, boy, that couldn't have been timed any better. Lou Rockwell, of course, is founder and chairman of the Mises Institute at Mises.org. He is the publisher of LouRockwell.com, which is the libertarian website that all the cool and informed people read every day. He was also chief of staff to Ron Paul, and he's an overall great guy. Lou, welcome back.
Tom, great to be with you as always.
All right, there's a lot to talk about, but you know what? Let's get the Rubio thing out of the way right away, because I just can't wait any longer to discuss this with you. Why don't you tell people what happened in case they missed it?
Well, it was tremendous. It was Chris Christie taking down Rubio. And Chris Christie is a former federal prosecutor, and he's got the intelligence and the articulateness, and also he's the kind of guy you don't want to have around the house either, I would say. But he took him down, and Chris Matthews compared him to the Harrison Ford character in Blade Runner, the guy who was skilled at scoping out replicants versus humans. And he showed that Marco Rubio is a robot. Tom, we discussed this in our very first post-debate program. I had somebody within the MSM who dealt with Rubio tell me the guy is first of all, not smart, that he's, and so they keep calling him smart, you'll notice. Whenever that happens, typically the guy's not smart. He's not capable of thinking on his feet whatsoever. However, he is a great memorizer and a great deliverer of memorized lines. I was told he has whole speeches, long paragraphs, alleged funny lines in his memory that he tries to bring out to answer questions, and that's why his answers never seem quite applicable. So he was asked a question by Christie, and instead of answering, by the debate moderators, instead of answering the question, he went on and to give this. What Christie later called his 25-second memorized speech about why Obama was deliberately doing what he was doing and was not just incompetent but was evil. He didn't use that word, but that's what it meant. And so then Christie is interrogating him, and he repeats the exact same thing word for word, at which point Christie says, "There it is. There's the 25-second memorized speech that I was talking about." And then just a few beats later, he repeats it again, word for word, and then a little bit later, a fourth time, word for word. And one of the mainstream reporters who was looking at this said some of the lines from that he actually repeated eight times during the debate, none of them making any sense to what was being discussed. And it also, as Trump said this morning, he said, Rubio's a nice guy. I like Rubio's a smart guy. Oh, yeah, right. But he said he sweats a lot. And he said, boy, the sweat was pouring off him during the debate. He said, I was right next to him. He said, it was really coming off him. And, it's a moment in American political history. And I think all of us who were watching it thought this is the end of this guy, because it just plays into people's doubts about him. Even a neocon this morning said that after the debate, he looked smaller, younger, and much more vulnerable.
The fact that he repeats that line in the middle of being accused of repeating lines is what was so spooky about it. It's like he's, because a normal person doesn't respond that way. And yet he kept on this completely irrelevant line of discussion at a time when they weren't talking about anything relating to this, and Christie was nailing him on the fact that he memorizes everything. It was spooky and weird. So what I'd like to do is, on the show notes page, I'm actually going to have the video just of that exchange, so you don't have to sit through the 2+ hours of the debate. If you're curious about this, you should watch it for yourself. Watch the whole thing, and you don't have to be a Chris Christie fan. I think Chris Christie has done his service for the human race, you know, and it's about time. It's about time he did something. But this was really great. That will be at tomwoods.com/588. I just wanted to make sure I remembered to mention that I'm going to post this. So I'm sorry if I interrupted.
No, you know, it's been compared to the Dan Quayle moment in 1988 in the vice presidential debate when he couldn't answer a question put to him 3 times. He was just lost and sort of incoherent, and then that's when he compared himself to Jack Kennedy, and that's when he was taken down as being no Jack Kennedy.
Right. Now, the
another
difference
stupid
there
guy,
is that,
by the way. Quayle, another
yeah,
stupid
right.
guy like Rubio.
But there's a case where obviously Benson had been waiting to unleash that line, whereas Christie really was just rolling with you know, the discussion. He was planning to hit Rubio on this, but he had no idea it was going to be handed to him on a silver platter like that.
No, you know, Christie's an impressive guy. He's very smart. He's very articulate. Again, he's a federal prosecutor, and therefore not a good guy, needless to say. But as you say, we all have to be grateful for him. This neocon icon who was being promoted as should be the next president, endorsed by Sheldon Adelson's newspaper, and you know, all the neocons love him. A warmonger, maybe even more of a warmonger than Cruz, although that's hard to believe. Now he's gone. And also another fun thing is he didn't run for the Senate at the same time, although he could have. Unlike Randy, he decided I'm just going to run for one office. Therefore, he's out of public office at the end of his Senate term. He'll have to go back to being a crooked lobbyist as he was when he was out of office before.
Oh, how about that? Well, you know, it's interesting what you say about Christie being articulate and so on. Again, I assume that since our listeners, thank goodness, have an IQ in excess of 65, they know this means we're not endorsing Chris Christie for having
Chris Christie's horrible.
What I'm saying, yeah, of course he. Hello, but. If I were looking at that debate and I had no ideological preconceptions, I was just an average person watching, I would actually say that Christie's the most impressive one on the stage because he seems smart.
That's right.
He seems to have conviction. He's tough. He answers the question that's posed to him. Whereas with Cruz, you get the artificial dramatic pauses that you know are staged and rehearsed, and before I answer your question, I'm going to take 20 seconds to say something that has nothing to do with the question. The typical politician style, much too polished, too clever by half kind of approach is not at all Chris Christie. And by the way, did you see that on Facebook they had this funny image going around? It's a collection of all the high school yearbook photos of all the candidates. And Christie looks like a guy you would not have wanted to cross when you were in high school.
I must say he looks
away.
Like that now.
Yeah, he looks like that now. Yeah, oh, he would beat the you-know-what out of you. All right, let's see. Let's go and let's talk about, in general, I have to say a little bit, you know, I think the Trump routine is starting to wear a little thin here, where it's you know, we get the speech about how the police are great. They're just great, and they do great things, and people don't appreciate how great they are, and we got to revere them more than we're revering them now because they're just great. It's almost like he had a Saturday Night Live character subbing for him. Like, that's just not good. That's a real, you know, turn off. And then the lecture on eminent domain, which is at a very low level, is a little off-putting. But on the other hand, as somebody I saw put it, okay, yeah, that's true. Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio, they'll save us from eminent domain. They'll blow $3 trillion on blowing up people for no good reason. But, you know, that parking lot will come about in a different way. And the funny thing is, they all believe in eminent domain in one degree or another.
Every single one, including Rand Paul, who unfortunately was not there last night, they all believe in eminent domain, government eminent domain. They'll tell you it's in the Constitution as if that justified anything. And so they're all in favor of eminent domain if it's going to for another bureaucratic hive or an indoctrination center or a killing base or a prison or whatever. So there's nobody who's sound on eminent domain in except Ron Paul in American politics. And then of course it came out this morning that the Bush family used eminent domain to build the Texas baseball stadium that for George Bush's then team. So too bad Trump didn't know that last night. So again, all the stuff that Trump is bad on, torture and all those kinds of things, they're all bad on. So it's...
Or they're lying about it and would be just as bad in secret, which is what I think would be the case with torture.
Or have been just as bad. I mean, Bush said, and we passed a law in Florida keeping, eminent domain from... Well, they're talking about private eminent domain. I'm all for that. I mean, that's a good use of state authority, I would say. But, again, as Trump points out, they're all for the pipeline from Canada, built like all other oil pipelines entirely with eminent domain. They're all for that. It's all the people who are going after Trump for using eminent domain for private purposes, which is obviously a very bad thing. It's theft. But they're all for it if it's for the pipeline. So it's nobody's got clean hands on this one. But I thought Trump looked very bad in his defense of eminent domain. That's absolutely, you're right, Tom.
I'm going to put at also at tomwoods.com/588, in case people are wondering about, well, what about that one guy who won't cooperate and now we can't have our road? There's actually a really good scholarly article by Bruce Benson. It's called it's about the holdout, the one holdout who won't cooperate. It's called The Mythology of Holdout as a Justification for Eminent Domain and Public Provision of Roads. So that will be there also. Does this seem to be the case, too, that nobody ever laughs at Ted Cruz's jokes? Why doesn't he just quit?
Because Ted Cruz has zero sense of humor, which, by the way, seems to me a disqualifying characteristic. I don't think you want to be around somebody who doesn't have a sense of humor. You certainly don't want them in power over you. And I have many other reasons not to want Ted Cruz in power over you. But no, he can't tell a joke. And nobody laughs. But he doesn't seem to get it. In fact, I thought he had a very shaky night in the debate. He didn't do well. He got discombobulated several times. And he's just, and also, of course, as Roger Stone put it, Carson kneecapped him over the whole business of putting out the announcement that Carson was dropping out.
I want to ask you how you felt like Cruz handled that.
I thought very badly. I mean, it was his apology seemed heartfelt, but he's an actor, of course. And then when Carson mentioned, there's one tweet that came out a minute after the initial one, which only, by the way, pointed out that it was unusual he's leaving for several days to go to Florida between the two primaries. Didn't say he was dropping out. And then they, apparently this had caused some controversy, so they sent out a tweet saying, by the way, he's not dropping out. Campaign's not dropping out. We didn't mean to give that impression. Cruz did badly last night. He was discombobulated at a couple of moments, very unusual for him. And he seemed off his game. And maybe it was his own feelings about how he was going to do in the primary. I will say, my mother was from New Hampshire, and I spent a lot of time, love New Hampshire, I've spent a lot of time there. Everybody in New Hampshire hates Iowa over their caucus. They all think the caucus is crooked. I think it's crooked too, by the way. I think Bernie actually won, and Trump actually won, and Ron Paul actually won, and they stole it from him. This is an old Iowa tradition. Santorum won, and then they announced that Romney had won to help him get started, even though they knew they were lying, and it was 16 days later when they said, oh, by the way, we made a mistake. So it's caucus is very, very easy to steal, very strange, and people... If you win the Iowa caucus, you're actually off on a bad foot in New Hampshire. Maybe that shouldn't be that way, but that's the way it is.
Well, Cruz definitely had some trouble on the Ben Carson situation, and I think just from my listening to it, I think he came off not insincere, but telling a story that sounded like a politician's story. Well, here's what happened. Here's the timeline. And you know that it could be that his timeline is right and everybody else's is wrong, but you know that's just not how politics works.
Also, to do that to your sister, who has obviously had a tragic life and a tragic death, to do that to her son, his nephew, mentioning his name, I thought that was pretty low. I mean, rather than being moved by it, I thought it was an outrage. Now, if he wanted to tell that story, I guess he could have said, there's somebody close to me, or I know somebody who went through this, and so forth. But it was, just impressed me as the kind of thing he told to appeal to the evangelicals in Iowa, and maybe they're all shouting amen at him, but it doesn't work other places.
Now, so for people who didn't watch the debate, let's make clear, he's saying that he had a family member as a sister or a half-sister.
Yeah, half-sister, he said.
He and his father had to rescue from a crack house.
Yes.
He's talking about things that really are private family matters that you would not broadcast to the whole world, much less to earn political points.
And he talks about how her son was damaged by all of this. And this kid is alive. I mean, he's got a job and a family, and to be demonized, this is not good manners. This is not the act of. He portrays himself as Mr. Christian. It seems to me it's not a very Christian act. It's a very uncharitable act to people close to you who you have a responsibility to, help, but not to use them as a political prop. Pretty off-putting.
There are other people we haven't gotten to. We got to get to them, and we'll do that after this quick break. Homeschoolers, I've got some free goodies for you, so hang on. What if I told you your homeschoolers could get a top-notch education in which they would also be exposed to some of the ideas and people we associate with libertarianism? They might actually learn who Ludwig von Mises was. They might actually read Frederick Bastiat. What if I told you they could get a top-notch education and you wouldn't have to run yourself ragged anymore? Well, that's what the Ron Paul curriculum is all about. And on top of the traditional liberal arts subjects, they're going to learn how to start their own small business, how to be an effective public speaker, how to manage their finances. Can you imagine teenagers learning this? In other words, the Ron Paul curriculum is going to prepare them not just for college, but for life. In the sciences, just the 7th and 8th grade sciences, the kids are learning how to build their own radios, how to build robots. They are loving the science courses. Plus, if you sign up through my link, you get $140 of free bonuses only through my link. So bookmark this site, ronpaulhomeschool.com. Only through that link can you get my $140 worth of free bonuses. Stop running yourself ragged, get your life back, and give your children an education that you and I would have given our right arms for. RonPaulHomeschool.com. All right, Lou, let's think about the other candidates. I think Ben Carson had his typically unimpressive night. Nothing changed for him last night. So,
you know, there was a very interesting article in the Guardian this morning talking about, from a body language standpoint and apparently other things this guy had heard, he said what happened to Carson during that, he didn't come out when his name was called. He stayed in the area off the stage. He said he froze, and he said it's either it's either total stage fright, and he said he had all the markings of somebody in just paralyzing stage fright. The way he was standing, and he said he thought that Trump was standing by and touching his elbow and so forth as a sign of support, not that Trump didn't hear his name. And he also noted that the other candidates came out and touched Trump's arm, and they acted to him like he's the alpha male, which, of course, he is the alpha male in all of this. So he said either it's just paralyzing stage fright or a little bit too much sedation. He said if somebody's got bad stage fright, a lot of doctors will prescribe an anti-anxiety drug, but that can, you got to really be careful of the dosage. And of course, this could explain the somnolence of Carson, that maybe he is being drugged. in order to be able to, for him to be able to get, not in a sinister way, but for him to be able to get out on the stage. So it was an unfortunate moment, but if indeed Trump was standing there as a way of supporting him, well, it should show something nice.
Yeah, that was a strange thing. I couldn't understand why that was happening or why he wasn't going out, or had he not heard his name called or whatever. Then they called Ted Cruz and he invites Cruz to go out on ahead of him. Well, then what are you doing standing there? The whole thing was very, very strange. Kasich had an okay. Kasich seemed a little bit more energetic. He had a little talk about the things he would do in the first 100 days, and there'd be a flurry of activity. And I thought it was the most life I'd ever seen out of him.
Yeah, and of course he, portrays himself as, although he went over his time every single time. I think this guy never actually keeps to the schedule. He can't shut up. So, he's apparently up in the polls. People are saying he's doing well. I must say I find him so off-putting I'm maybe just too biased to judge, but he was said to have had a good night. That's exactly what people are saying.
Well, if he comes in second, or if he beats Rubio in any capacity, it's going to be hard for Rubio to keep claiming that coming in third is the new first.
Yes.
At some point, coming in third means you came in third. You have to face that at some point. Let's see. I thought two nights ago, Jeb Bush stumbled quite a bit over his words, and I thought he sounded nervous. And I thought, isn't this funny how this overwhelmingly dominant political family has, now finds itself in this position?
Well, of course, he's a doofus. I mean, he's goofy.
And that doesn't help.
Well, I mean,
that's not helping.
No, and he's not articulate. Some people say he's not as smart as W, and I don't think W was exactly one of the world-class intellectuals. Of course, none of these guys are intellectuals. But Bush, he's just an unimpressive guy. And then the media was saying, boy, he really went after Trump. He criticized Trump, and isn't that wonderful? And he really did well, and he's an impressive guy, and, the establishment candidate and so forth. He's not an impressive guy. He's a very unimpressive guy. So, again, like Chris Christie, also evil, but he's an impressive guy, Chris Christie. There's none of that, not a hint of that in Jeb Bush. There's absolutely nothing impressive about him except his height. He's a tall guy. That's all you can say for him. Even his mother is not impressed by him. I noticed when he's got her, of course, out terrible Barbara out campaigning for him, and she's talking about his good points, and she says, well, he doesn't brag. And then she's paused and she said, we don't allow that. So here's his 90-year-old mom. Very, very funny. And she said, he's also relatively funny.
Yeah, relatively funny. Hey, this is terrible. Why are you doing this to the kid? Relatively funny? No. I mean, she had to use the all words relatively.
No, it's hilarious. And of course, he's got a mother problem. And, she's reputed to be Mummy Dearest and a very mean mother, cold mother, and made it clear to him that he was her least favorite. So, was the chicken and the egg? He probably was her least favorite because he was the most unimpressive. Not that I think any of these guys deserve their role in American society or business or government.
Right, right, of course. Now, Trump was asked about, well, actually, originally Cruz was asked about Trump's temperament. Aren't you afraid of having this guy, with his finger on the nuclear button? And I hear this a lot. But, and of course, what else does Cruz do other than avoid the question, right? Which is what
Yes.
He does. He just avoids the question, does not answer. Trump pointed that out. By the way, he didn't answer the question. Right. Yeah, he didn't answer the question. And Trump gave his own answer, but I want to point out that I personally am of the belief that, yes, Trump is very bombastic in his, in his public persona since entering politics. But obviously, as a businessman, he couldn't have gotten where he is with that kind of persona. And there is nobody, friend or foe, who has dealt with him in the private sector who has said, yep, that's the way he acts toward everybody. So to an extent, this is a show. He's putting on a show to be as dramatic as possible, to get as much publicity and attention as he possibly can. I highly doubt that would be his persona as president. So I'm not Yeah, I don't want anybody's finger on the nuclear button, but I think this is a typical, very low IQ neocon style of argument against Trump. There are a lot of things you can be upset about Trump for, but come on, it's obvious this is political theater. And anybody who's we've watched Donald Trump in public life for years and years and years. He has an extremely even temperament. It's not that he's just gone crazy in the past few months. It's that this is his political style. But again, he thinks of being in government and making deals as being kind of like what he does in the private sector. That's not the case, as Mises pointed out. But I do think that you would probably see roughly the same temperament.
Well, I think he was, and he made a good point when he said he thought that the other guys up on the stage would have pulled the trigger much more easily than he would. For example, he said, I opposed the Iraq war and saw what a disaster
exactly.
would be. I also thought he made a great foreign policy statement on North Korea. The evil Martha Raddatz, who's the chief offense commentator for ABC, said, no, so shouldn't the U.S., here's this horrible threat to the whole world of North Korea sending off this little rocket, and shouldn't the U.S. have just blown it up on the pad and been preemptive? And so some of them, like Cruz, said, well, I'd have to get the intelligence briefings to know what I should do. And she said, well, wait a minute, you talk all the time about the Middle East, you don't have intelligence briefings. He says, well, yes, I did. And anyway, it's not a good moment for him. The others said, yeah, blow it up. And Trump said, he said, this is China's job to handle North Korea. They're the next-door neighbor. They're allies. They have all the financial and other sorts of power to be able to take care of North Korea. Let's leave this to China. And I thought, goes along with what I think are sort of the outlines of a Trumpian foreign policy, which is beat your chest. We're the best. We're the biggest. We have the greatest military. We'll do anything. However, we're not going to do anything to you unless you do anything to us, sort of the way he does with his criticisms personally. So the fact that he wanted to let Russia handle Syria and ISIS and all that and let China handle North Korea, you obviously can't call him a non-interventionist in any sense, but it's sort of an old America the First kind of impulse. And boy, a heck of a lot better than neoconism.
Yeah, in that area, certainly there's I can't see how he could be worse. Now, when I say could, he could be worse. But if he stuck to these types of statements, then on foreign policy, he would be better. He would certainly be better than Rubio. Yeah, yes, he'd be worse on some other things. That's true. But to me, and I can't even be sure of that. But to me, war is a pretty big issue. And if he is better on it, then, I'll be happy that he was better on it. But that's as far, that's as far as I'll go on it.
That's right.
Let's see. What else do I want to say? I missed the closing statements, actually, because I fell asleep and I thought, well, I'll get it on YouTube and I'll watch those closing statements. And I forgot to do that. I totally missed them. Were any of them memorable or were any of them memorably unmemorable, like when Ben Carson simply recited the preamble and that was the end of it?
Of course, poor Carson again, Mr. Sleepwalking. Kasich giving his usual bureaucratic paean to himself. When Cruz ended his, he said, and I won Iowa and I look forward to winning New Hampshire. And then Trump gets his closing statement and he said, well, he won Iowa because he stole the votes of Ben Carson. So it was, and of course, because it was the closing statements, Cruz couldn't answer, and he'd already been knocked down by Carson on that too, and reporters and pollsters, for whatever that's worth, all say that in New Hampshire this has really got legs. This whole story of the dirty trick, and it's absolutely not a capital D capital T dirty trick in Republican political history. What Cruz did to Carson. Nevertheless, it's been exposed, and it shows because Cruz is a hypocrite. And since he's hailing himself as the Reverend Cruz, it hurts. It turns out he's more like Elmer Gantry. But again, of course, Trump said the same stuff. On the other hand, his whole demeanor, I hate to even say this, but I mean, it was more quote unquote, presidential. He was calmer, he sort of floated above the whole thing. The kids were fighting each other, and he's just, once in a while making a statement just on his own above everybody else. So I think, unfortunately, we don't have the Drudge poll for this one.
Yeah, that was disappointing.
But I think if Very disappointing. But if we did, I think it's no question. In fact, Time magazine had 70% of people saying saying that Trump won it, and everybody else getting very small figures. And I think that's right. It was a very good night for Trump, even though he's bad on so many different things. I think there's no question he's probably going to win the primary. The only question is, who's next? You see some polls that say it's Jeb. I must say I find that very, very hard to believe. Others think it's maybe still Rubio. Others think maybe it's Cruz. Others, think it's going to be Kasich. The whole establishment worships Kasich. They love Kasich. You know, former investment banker with Lehman Brothers, former criminal congressman, now criminal governor, totally representative of the special interests owned by all the worst aspects in American society and government. They would love him. He just seems to me so off-putting that you just, I don't know, it's, I just can't see it, but what do I know? The people in New Hampshire may have been
fooled. These polls that I'm seeing are so fluid in terms of who the second place candidate is in New Hampshire. I mean,
that's right.
It could plausibly be Kasich, Rubio, Cruz, or possibly even Bush. That's how fluid it is. So that will be interesting. Now,
and I think the one thing these are all truthfully showing, Christie's going nowhere, despite his brilliant takedown of Rubio.
I know. I don't get that.
Well, people don't like him and they don't trust him. I mean, you may, even if you believe in the whole court system and everything, you may believe in the prosecutor, but people don't like a prosecutor. They don't like him. So it's one thing for him to be the prosecutor. Maybe they don't want him. They don't want Eliot Spitzer being the governor either. If we think of the New York example, these prosecutors are very bad men, and that Christie is a corrupt criminal, statist monster. He's a Republican, in other words. But he's not. I think he's not going anywhere. Although he claimed this morning he was going on to South Carolina, no matter where he placed, because he thought the whole race was much more fluid because of the disappearance of Marco.
Yeah, but he has no following
no.
in South Carolina.
No, he's got no chance. And they keep saying, well, if Bridgegate hadn't happened, he would have had a great chance. I don't think so.
No, I think people have mostly forgotten about that
right
now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. No, it's because people don't like the prosecutor type. I mean, the guy who will string you up happily, whether you're guilty or not. In this case, of course, Rubio was more than guilty, but Christie strikes you as the kind of guy who'd happily put an innocent man in the electric chair to, put another notch on his belt.
Let me say a couple things here. The Drudge poll, the lack of a Drudge poll, was curious, given that Drudge obviously doesn't like Rubio, and this would have been a poll that would have crushed Rubio.
Yes.
So strange that there wasn't one. Secondly, on the North Korea thing, I want to urge people also on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/588, to listen to the episode on North Korea that I did a couple of weeks ago with Michael Malice, who is something of an expert on North Korea. And, Michael said, I want to come on and talk about this topic. And I said, I don't know if my listeners are all that interested. He said, I take a totally Rothbardian line on how to handle North Korea. So I thought, I am totally intrigued then. Get on the show. So I think it's actually one of the best, most informative episodes I've done in quite a while. So you'll want to listen to that, tomwoods.com/588. Anything else we're overlooking here?
No, I think we covered all these clowns I was going to say one of whom is going to be ruling us. We don't know that. It could be Hillary. I talked to a left winger this morning, top research scientist, and he was very interested in politics. Maybe he's even a progressive, but he said to me, I don't like any of these people, but it seems to me Hillary is by far the most likely to start World War III. And I must say, I kind of feel that, maybe even more than Rubio or Cruz. I mean, she really is a very scary figure. So you'd like to hope that we're talking about, small benefits versus all these other guys, or small. But of course, that would be a very major negative if she actually were to do that. She sounds like she would. She's affiliated with the most crazy neocons, the most bloodthirsty, belligerent types who are funding her campaign. You'd like to not see her, but you really don't want to see any of these people. You'd like to just abolish the presidency. It's a terrible office, and you know, you mentioned about we don't want anybody with their finger on the trigger. What kind of power is that one man, on his own say-so, has the ability to destroy the earth? And everybody in America thinks, well, that makes sense to me, that they're, you know, that some military officer is carrying around the so-called football behind the president with all the codes to set off all the missiles and send off the bombers. U.S. has got almost 8,000 warheads, plenty to destroy the whole earth over and over again. Maybe they can destroy Mars and the moon at the same time. Why does one guy have this power? I mean, what is wrong with our system that one politician has that kind of power? Nobody's used it, although sort of, you know, Truman, the evil Harry Truman, of course, sort of used it. But it's something rotten in the state of Denmark, that's for sure.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you what you think about what Dan McCarthy said on the show a few episodes ago. It's a reflection of what he wrote in an article recently about Rubio. Now, this was before the disastrous debate performance, although Rubio is still, you know, competitive for the second place slot in New Hampshire, so he's not completely out. But Dan was saying that Rubio is the likely nominee for the following reason, that Cruz and Trump are going to be fighting over the same, basically the same demographic, the same voter base. And as everybody else drops out, they're all going to throw their support to Rubio because most of them can't stand Cruz. And the Carson people might have been able to stand Cruz until this dirty trick. So they're going to throw their support to Rubio, particularly because if you were to ask the type of people who fund these other campaigns, do you think Donald Trump is going to be good to you once he's in power? Their view is probably not. It's not a chance I'm willing to take. So they'll throw all their money to Rubio. He gets the entire establishment vote, and he wins, even though right now Trump is crushing everybody in the polls. What do you think of that theory? Because there's something to it, I think.
Well, Dan's a smart guy, and certainly the whole establishment likes Rubio, the neocons especially. Whether he's got things in his background that may come out that would hurt him. And he certainly, even the stuff we know, he has a very checkered past. For example, when he was head of the Republican Party of Florida, he used the company credit card, the Republican Party credit card, to do tens of thousands of dollars of improvements to his house and spent a lot of money from the Republican Party on his own personal, and he, you know, eventually paid it back with the help of Paul Singer, his billionaire buddy in Florida. But this is a guy who's, and other things too. So we just have to see. But and of course they can definitely turn a sow's ear into a silk purse, right? The propagandists and the neocons. I wouldn't rule it out, but I must say I think it's unlikely. I've always thought it was unlikely. And forgive me for saying something so politically incorrect. I don't believe there'll ever be an American president with a lisp. I just don't believe it. I think that's a negative, and I don't think Rubio is even before this disaster for him, but. You know, I've been wrong before, so I can't. I'm not 100% sure of that. So who they'll come up with? I mean, that's a question. But they're having trouble. These guys are having trouble with Trump. They're having trouble with Cruz, and it's interesting to me. Is it they don't like Cruz because he's so smart, or he does? Is he not a practitioner of honest graft? I mean, the old Tammany expression for. When somebody was bribed, they stay bribed. You could count on them to fulfill the terms of the bribe. I don't mean that Cruz is taking bribes, although who would be shocked if that actually happened with all these guys. I don't know. He's a total warmonger. He's a statist. I don't believe that they don't like him because they don't like him personally. Nobody has to like, how many people like Dick Nixon personally? It's not, that's not the reason that Trump is, that Cruz is opposed. But my guess is they could happily take Cruz. If it were Cruz or Trump, they're happy to have Cruz, even though they don't personally like Cruz. They'd probably much rather have a drink with Trump than with Cruz. And I think just, and Cruz is also capable of dropping some of that religiosity. He barely mentioned it in New Hampshire, whereas he was running as a circuit riding minister in Iowa. So what are his actual views? Are they the views of the total establishment status guy before he got in the Senate, who then, some people think, set out to make the big guys in Washington, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, those kinds of guys, dislike him as a quick way to establish himself as an outsider and not part of the regime, not part of the establishment. But of course, it's all a trick. He is part of the regime. His wife, of course, is a vice president of Goldman Sachs. We know Goldman Sachs loans got him into the U.S. Senate. He's not an outsider. It even could be, I don't want to be too conspiratorial here, but it could actually benefit Cruz if the establishment is forced to come around. Well, they don't like him. They don't really like him because he's too much of an outsider, but well, we'll take him as versus Trump. Whereas actually, again, they may not want to have dinner with him, but they're happy to take him because he's a monstrous warmonger, a monstrous statist, a very scary scary guy in both domestic and foreign policy, a bloodthirsty guy, and the neocons love him. I mean, we know that Sheldon Adelson and Miriam Adelson both wrote personal checks to the Cruz campaign just before the Iowa caucuses. So I don't know what is real and what is show in the alleged establishment dislike of Cruz, except just on a sort of, maybe it's on an aesthetic level, they don't have a problem with his policies.
Well, if there is anything to the Dan McCarthy analysis, if New Hampshire yields an uncertain outcome, that is to say, if Rubio is still not in second and somebody else has surged, now if it's Kasich, that won't be that meaningful because, as Dan points out, he doesn't have any support anywhere else in the country. But if it's Cruz or if even Bush somehow surges and the race remains fluid, the longer it remains fluid, the better that is for Trump, because these people are all fighting each other for that second place role and the establishment is fighting against itself. But if Rubio comes in second in New Hampshire, there is the chance that you get a lot of dropouts who then go on to endorse Rubio. So
Thomas,
I don't know. We'll just have to wait.
Exactly right.
Yeah, we'll have to wait. We'll know, in just a couple of days about New Hampshire and have a better picture of the whole thing in about a week. All right, Lou, I'm going to let you run. Thanks so much for doing this. We're always glad to, people are always happy to hear these debate analysis episodes for whatever reason.
as you say, they don't have to watch the actual debate, which was almost 3 hours long.
I know.
Unbelievably
it's
long.
Insane. I
Terrible.
Know it, Lou. It's a good thing I'm not paying you a market wage for your services. That'd be the end of the show. All right, thanks a lot. See you.
Thank you, Tom. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. I'm really happy to announce, by the way, that the website is up for the Contra Cruise. Bob Murphy and I are hosting a cruise on Royal Caribbean October 9th to 16th, 2016. It's called the Contra Cruise after our weekly podcast, Contra Krugman. Now, come on, we're going to have music and games and sessions and receptions and dinners and excursions and a ton of fun with like-minded people on the high seas. Come on now, karaoke, it's all going to be there. It is impossible for this not to be a blast. Interested? Is your appetite whetted? Then head over to ContraCruise.com and grab your slot before there aren't any left. Tomorrow on the show, Walter Block joins us to talk about Milton Friedman. No way you're going to miss that. Thanks so much for listening. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.